Om Gyanati Minandasya Janajana Salakaya Saksu Samilatam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Sabhanantikam Panchakaputurubhyascha Vibhasendu Vevacha Titaram Pabene Ibyo Vaishnavi Yonamo Namaha. So today, this allows you to complete the ninth chapter of the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This section begins with the questions of Vidura to Maitreya Muni. And he's inquiring about Krishna's dealings with the material energy. Because this is an essential point. Essential in the sense that here we are in the material world, not being able to see Krishna in the spiritual world yet. If we don't see Krishna, we're stuck forever in the material world. So how to see Krishna while within the material world? This is actually the symptom. To see Krishna is in everywhere is the symptom of the greatest yogi actually. Yogi namapi sarvesham madgatenantaratmanam sharavan bhajate omam. Not only to see Krishna, but to worship Him, sharavan, with great faith, bhajate omam. Same yuktatava mata. He is the topmost yogi, one who's always seeing Krishna. So this is the predicament that we are in, that if we don't see Krishna, we are seeing matter, but yet we're not qualified to see Krishna. So Vidura asks about the dealings of the material energy. But he wants to know about the material energy in such a way that that it is connected to Krishna. We will thus be able to see Krishna. So we've heard in his explanations, in Maitreya's reply, we've heard his explanations up to this point, how Krishna is the source of everything. Aham eva sameva grain nanyajat sarasat param. That He alone existed prior to the creation, when there was neither Brahma nor Shiva, nor anything, nor anyone. And then the material creation, by His glance, came forward at every step after that. In the subsequent creation, Krishna's glance, His desire was required. So therefore, when we see anything of matter, we can understand that if we trace its origin back, ultimately we must see Krishna. Whatever we look at, if we trace its origin back, we will see Krishna. So that alone is very wonderful, but there's more. So in the course of explaining to Vidura, Maitreya Muni has described, after describing the creation of the within the Mahatattva, within the primal material ingredient, now he's describing the creation of the material world within the universe and how Brahma has taken his birth from the Garbhadakshay Vishnu, the expansion of the Lord, who is the super soul of the universe. And the creative principle, the material creative principle, has sprung, forced itself, practically speaking, by the will of Garbhadakshay Vishnu from his navel, and it has come up and blossomed into a lotus flower. And upon that lotus flower, Lord Brahma has taken his birth. Lord Brahma is meant to create that which has already primarily been created by Krishna. But yet, there He is alone on the lotus flower, and it is quite terrifying for Him. And He doesn't really know how to proceed. He wants to know what the where he came from. Somehow he comes to consciousness on this lotus flower. He wants to know what his source is, where he came from, and Vidura is hearing this from Maitreya. The reference of this, a few verses in the. Lord Brahma, situated on that lotus, could not perfectly understand the creation. He could not understand what he saw before him. Nor could he understand the lotus upon which he sat, nor could he understand himself. At the end of the millennium, so after 1,000 years, the air of devastation began to move the water and the lotus in great circular waves. And Brahma became afraid. Lord Brahma, in his ignorance, contemplated, who am I that I am situated on top of this lotus? Wherefrom has it sprouted? There must be something downward. And that from which this lotus has grown must be within the water. Lord Brahma, thus contemplating, entered the water through the channel of the stem of the lotus. But in spite of entering the stem and going nearer to the navel of Vishnu, he could not trace out the root. He could not understand. While searching in that way about his existence, Brahma reached the ultimate time, which is the eternal wheel in the hand of Vishnu, the chakra, and which generates fear in the mind of the living entity like the fear of death. Thereafter, being unable to achieve the desired destination, he couldn't find out his source. Brahma retired from such searching and came back again to the top of the lotus. Thus controlling all objectives, he concentrated his mind on the Supreme Lord. So Brahma, after concentrating his mind on Krishna in samadhi, focusing his mind fully on the Lord, then by Krishna's grace, when the Lord was pleased with him, the Lord revealed himself to Brahma. And when Brahma saw the Lord sitting upon the waters of devastation, upon Anantashesha, he offered prayers to him, which explained and glorified the transcendental form of the Lord. Because he saw a form, but he understood that that form was different from our forms. We are souls, but this form is made out of matter. We are spirit, we are eternal. But this is made out of matter. There is duality. This is not transcendental. Well, we are transcendental. We feel transcendental in the sense that we feel we will never die. Whether one is 4 years old or 20 years old or 40 years old or 80 years old or 90 years old, practically the feeling one has, although one may see the body crumbling, decaying, rotting right in front of him, he has that understanding, that feeling that he will never die. And this is the essential cause of the problems of the living entity in the material world. He's stuck within a material body. He is transcendental, but the body is temporary. This is the asocha and asocha tarma. This is the basic principle of material, of spiritual life, to know this basic knowledge. But when Brahma looked at the Lord, he understood that his body is transcendental. And regardless of whatever form the Lord is in, that form is eternal and transcendental. And Satchidananda Vigraha, eternity bliss. So Brahma offered prayers glorifying the transcendental nature of the Lord. He glorified the potency of just hearing about Krishna. He explained that whatever incarnation the Lord appears as is also transcendental, whatever form the Lord appears as. And then he made a request of the Lord and asked for the ability to do his devotional service, which was the creation, secondary creation or the creation based on the ingredients already created by the Lord. So he asked if he could do that service because it was such a complicated thing, the creation of the universe. He didn't know how to do it. All the planets, everything had to be, and the personalities had to be, have to be situated properly. And not only did he not know how to do it, but he was also had some fear within him that by creating, because when one creates, one is involved with passion. And one immediately begins to think, I have done this, isn't it wonderful? No one is more wonderful than me. No one can do a better job than me. This is the product of the mode of passion. So Brahma was afraid of thinking himself the creator and getting contaminated by passion. So he asked Krishna, please give me the ability to create. And please, don't let me think that I am the doer of this activity. The one who is doing it. Kartaham ki manyate. So after offering prayers to Lord Krishna, very sweet prayers, explaining how Krishna, those points as well as how Krishna, tambhakti yogu paribharato, ritsaroja sheshita chite patonana natapongsan, however one meditates upon Krishna, how Krishna reciprocates and sits down within the lotus of that person's clean and pure heart. Very sweet prayers. So the Lord was very pleased with Brahma from that. By these prayers, and also that he had been fixed in samadhi for 1,000 years. So we will begin with the reply of Srila Prabhupada Vishnu to the prayers of Brahma. Maitreya Muni is explaining this in text 26 of the 9th chapter. O Vidura, he's telling Vidura this, after observing the source of his appearance, namely the personality of Godhead, Brahma prayed for his mercy, the Lord's mercy, as far as his minds and words would permit him. Thus having prayed, he became silent, as if tired from his activities of penance, knowledge, and mental concentration. The Lord saw that Brahma was very anxious about the planning and construction of the different planetary systems, and was depressed upon seeing the devastating waters. There was water below the lotus and air that would agitate the water. And this was very frightening for him, because the waters were unlimitedly vast and unlimitedly deep. And the wind blowing was very powerful. So Brahma saw that, this circumstance. And also, in addition, he didn't know how to do what he was supposed to do. He knew he was supposed to create, but he didn't know how to do it. So the Lord understood this. He could understand the intention of Brahma purely to please him. And thus he spoke in a deep and thoughtful words, removing all the illusion that had arisen. Here is a little of Prabhupada's purport. The devastating water was so fearful that even Brahma was perturbed at its appearance and became very anxious about how to situate the different planetary systems in outer space to accommodate the different kinds of living entities, such as the human beings, those lower than the human beings, and the superhuman beings. And then a little later on, Lord Brahma had to accommodate different places and situations for the requisite bodies of the conditioned souls. This is something that we think that we have, that we live in a house, and the house is the best of accommodations. But there are other living entities that don't like the heat and the hot water and the AC and the light pouring in. There are other living entities who, according to their natures and bodies, they have to live under the ground, in the moisture. And if they don't live under the ground, they die quickly. And there's other living entities who have to fly in the air, and they'd feel completely tortured if constricted to a house. And there are other living entities that fly inside and outside, and you know, and they're everywhere, your eyes, nose, or mosquitoes. Everyone has a different need to live. So many living entities have different needs to live. Some living entities live in our intestines. And that's the only place they can live. So Brahma had to work out all the different varieties of living entities and what their suitable accommodation was and how to put this all together. It's a very, very complicated task. So Lord Brahma had to accommodate different places and situations for the requisite bodies of the conditioned souls. The task was meant only for Brahma. And no one in the universe can even understand how difficult it was. So we forget how difficult the creation is to understand and take it for granted. But we should understand that the scientists, although we think that the scientists know everything, they can study, and they have studied how we digest our food, for instance, for so long, and they can't even understand that one thing. What to speak of how the air gets transferred into the blood, etc., etc. They can describe it a little bit. They don't understand how it works. How the food, the energy is assimilated by the body, the water, etc. How this amazing one, this is just one body, and there are so many kinds of body. How it works, how it starts, goes on for so many years, the heart just pumps. We don't have to think about making the heart beat, the lungs, the air intake, No, this is all so wonderful. So Brahma organized all this on the cosmic level, on the microcosmic level, so no one can understand how difficult it is, what to speak of, to duplicate it. But by the grace of the Lord, Brahma was able to execute the tremendous task so perfectly that everyone is amazed to see the workmanship of the Vidhata, or the regulator. And everything works in a regulated way. So Krishna began to speak to Brahma. He said, "O Brahma, O depth of Vedic wisdom, be neither depressed nor anxious about the execution of creation. What you are begging from me has already been granted before." Because this happens every day of Brahma. Through the Prabhupada's purport. "Any person authorized by either the Lord or his bona fide representative is already blessed, as is the work entrusted to him. Of course, the person entrusted with such a responsibility should always be aware of his incapability and must always look for the mercy of the Lord for the successful execution of his duty." Now, in that little one sentence is everything, the secret of success. And it can be expanded into so many books. And Prabhupada says, "Of course." But that "of course" we tend to forget about. And what is the "of course"? That we are incapable. We take a service. And this is ideal, that one takes a service and wishes to perform that service with devotion for Krishna's pleasure. Like Lord Brahma wishing to create the universe. We may not have such a huge service because according to our piety, we are allowed to take one, we can take big services or small services. But ultimately, it doesn't make a difference whether we have a big service or a small service. We have to execute that service with as much, with devotion. So one wants to have a service, something to offer to Krishna. Not just think about Krishna, not just meditate, but even if we're thinking of meditating on Krishna, meditating upon serving Krishna. But of course, that person entrusted with such a responsibility should always, how often does always mean? It means continuously. Should always be aware of his incapability. And what is that called when one is aware of one's incapability? It is called humility. And this is what stops knowing our limitations and knowing our faults from becoming neurotic tendencies and psychological diseases. The next step. So one must know his incapability, but must always look for the mercy of the Lord for the successful execution of his duty. So to always be turning to Krishna is the secret. And basically, this is the entire Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada gives the example of Arjuna, and this is the secret, the basis of spiritual life. To have some service to do, big or small is irrelevant, and to be always turning to Krishna, to know oneself incapable of doing it. And always turning to Krishna and offer him that thing with love. And the advancement of our devotional service, this is true from the beginning to the end in one sense, but the advancement is the degree of love that we actually develop. And the clarifying of ourselves as servants of Krishna, our relationship to Krishna. One should not be puffed up because he is entrusted with certain executive work. Fortunate is he who is so entrusted. And if he is always fixed in the sense of being subordinate to the will of the Supreme, he is sure to come out successful in the discharge of his work. Arjuna was entrusted with the work of fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And before he was so entrusted, the Lord had already arranged for his victory. But Arjuna was always conscious of his position as subordinate to the Lord, and thus he accepted him as the supreme guide in his responsibility. Anyone who takes pride in doing responsible work, but does not give credit to the Supreme Lord, is certainly falsely proud and cannot execute anything nicely. Brahma and persons in the line of his disciplic succession who follow in his footsteps are always successful in the discharge of loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord. The Lord continues. Oh, Brahma. So think about that. We should think about that not once, but twice, and not only twice, but really continuously, how incapable we are and how dependent we are on Krishna. Krishna explains this point in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Chaitasya savakamani maya sanyasya matpara buriyoga mupashita machita satatambhava. That while you're working, you should always think of me. Always think of me, that means always thinking oneself incapable. And relying upon Krishna's mercy and begging Krishna for mercy. And doing that work in his service. Maitreya continues to narrate what the Lord said to Brahma. O Brahma, situate yourself in penance and meditation and follow the principles of knowledge to receive my favor. By these actions, you will be able to understand everything from within your heart. Interestingly, Maitreya was asked this question by Vidura way back in chapter 5. Vidura said, please give me instructions on the transcendental devotional service of the Lord, so that he who is situated in the heart of everyone, the Lord who is in everyone's heart, will be pleased to impart from within knowledge of the absolute truth. In terms of the Vedic principles that are delivered only to those who are purified by the process of devotional service. So Vidura asked Maitreya to tell him about that process that is going to inspire Krishna to talk to us from within our hearts and reveal to us exactly what we should do continuously. So that was one of Vidura's questions. And now the answer to that is coming. You should situate yourself in penance and meditation and follow the principles of knowledge to receive my favor. By these actions, by doing these things, you'll be able to understand everything from within your heart. That means savasya chaham videsana visto and tesham satate yuktanam, that from within the heart, Dami Buddhiyogam Tam, Krishna will give all the instructions that his devotee can serve him and come. come to him. But one has to be very high in his knowledge and penance. That means that everything has to be done bhajatam pratipurvakam, with great loving devotion for Krishna. And that is our process to develop this. Prabhupada's purport. The mercy the Lord bestows upon a particular person engaged in executing the responsible work entrusted to him. That means if Krishna bestows work and one takes that work as his devotion with full devotional service, the mercy that such a person gets is beyond our imagination. But his mercy is received due to our penance and perseverance in executing devotional service. Brahma was entrusted with the work of creating the planetary systems. The Lord instructed him that when he meditated, he would very easily know where and how the planetary systems must be arranged. The directions were to come from within, and there was no necessity for anxiety in that task. Such instructions of Buddhi Yoga are directly imparted by the Lord from within, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10.10. That's the recitation on the Saptatika. He continues. We'll read the next three verses up to 34. Now these three verses are very, especially these three verses are especially like the part of the Chatusloki Bhagavatam verses which we read at the end of the second canto. O Brahma, when you are absorbed in devotional service, in the course of your creative activities, you will see me in you. So when you look within yourself, you will see me, Krishna says. And throughout the universe, you will see me in yourself, that means inside and outside. Everywhere you look throughout the universe, you will see nothing but me. And you will see that you, yourself, the universe and the living entities are all in me. So everywhere you look, you will see me, Krishna says, and then you'll see that everything is situated in me, that you are in me and everything. That I am in everything and everything is in me. This is wonderful. You will see me in all living entities as well as all over the universe. Everywhere you look, when you look at a person, you will not just see that person separated from me. You will see me when you look at that person. As well as all over the universe, just as fire is situated in wood, because I am there, just like in every piece of wood, there is fire lying dormant. Only in that state of transcendental vision will you be able to be free from all kinds of illusions. When you are free from the conception of gross and subtle bodies, and when your senses are free from all influences of the modes of material nature, you will realize your pure form in my association. So then, by seeing me in everything, and when you look at living entities, not see their gross bodies or subtle material bodies, and you will see me, you will see them as souls, and you will be free from all the influences of the modes of material nature. And then, with that pure vision of always seeing me and not being touched by the modes of material nature, you will realize your pure form in my association. So one will understand Brahma and one will understand one's eternal relationship with Krishna in this way. And at that time you will be situated in pure consciousness, because that is pure consciousness. To understand our eternal relationship with Krishna, Jivera Sarupoi Krishna Nityadas, this is pure consciousness. We read some parts of these purports. Now, 32. Brahma prayed that he might not forget his eternal relationship with the Lord during the course of his material activities. So he was afraid, Brahma was afraid of becoming contaminated. So he was afraid of forgetting his relationship with Krishna. In answer to that prayer, the Lord said that he should not think of existing without relationship with his omnipotency. So what does that mean? That means that we have an eternal relationship with Krishna. Eternal means that it existed forever in the past, it exists at the present, and it will exist forever in the future. And since Krishna is everywhere and he has a relationship with everything, including ourselves, first, we should never forget our relationship with Krishna and not think that we don't have a relationship with Krishna, and always be living within that relationship with Krishna, and understand also, because Krishna is omnipotent, that he is everywhere and there is nothing separate from him, neither in time nor in space. So we have a connection with Krishna, and we should be living in that loving connection, that loving service connection. And everything else has a relationship with Krishna. And to use ourselves as servants of Krishna, should use, do our duties with devotion and use those things that are Krishna's in his service. So one should not think of existing without a relationship with his omnipotency. The example is given of the fire and wood. The fire kindled in wood is always the same, although the wood may be all of different types. Similarly, the bodies within the material creation may be specifically different according to the shape and quality, but the spirit souls within them are not different from one another. So all living entities have their relationship with Krishna. The quality of fire, warmth, is the same everywhere, and the spiritual spark, or part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit, is the same in every living being. Thus the potency of the Lord is distributed all over his creation. So to not mistake anything as being separate from Krishna. How to do this? We spoke about this in the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam verse, the 35th verse, which was the Sarahasyam, the very secret conclusion. This Maham Yatam Ahanti Bhutani Bhutesu Chesvanu Pravastani Apravastani Mamateshu Nateshvaham. Krishna explains how he has entered into everything within the universe, and yet he is separate. There is nothing that exists that is independent of him. So he is in one sense everything, but yet he is separate. So one actually sees Krishna in everything only when one has the Saharasyam. That means when one has Prema Bhakti. So this is a very exalted stage of consciousness. But Krishna is telling Brahma to not worry, because he's pleased him so much that he's on such an exalted level that he will not get into any difficulty in this way. This transcendental knowledge alone can save one from the contamination of material illusion. So this is an answer to the question, how can I be freed from pride although I'm dealing with the material energy? This is the only way, that one has to have given up his mood of being the enjoyer of the material world, and one has to accept and live in his relationship with Krishna as Krishna's servant, and to be in love with Krishna, and understand with transcendental knowledge how Krishna is in everything, and how everything and everyone is meant for Krishna's pleasure. There is no other way to keep out of Maya. Or at stages prior to that, one can be like Brahma, praying to Krishna and begging him for his mercy continuously, understanding that we have a relationship with Krishna, that Krishna hears all, knows all, and by his mercy can keep us free from contamination of the material world. But this takes great, great, great sincerity. Since the Lord's potency is distributed everywhere, a pure soul or devotee of the Lord can see everything in relationship with the Lord and therefore has no affection for the outer coverings. That pure spiritual conception makes him immune to all contamination of material association. The pure devotee never forgets the touch of the Lord in all circumstances. And then in the Prabhupada's purport to the 31st verse, when he says that you will see me in you, and you will see me throughout the universe, there is also another meaning, less philosophical, but still more wonderful. It is cited herein by the Lord that during his daytime, Brahma would see him as Lord Krishna. He would appreciate how the Lord expanded himself into all the calves during his childhood in Vrindavan. He would know how Yasoda Mayi saw all the universes and planetary systems within the mouth of Krishna during his playful childhood pastimes. And he would also see that there are many millions of Brahmas during the appearance of Lord Krishna in Brahma's daytime. But all these manifestations of the Lord appearing everywhere in his eternal transcendental forms cannot be understood by anyone but the pure devotees, who are always engaged in devotional service to the Lord and are fully absorbed in the Lord. The high qualification of Brahma are also indicated herein. So Brahma would actually see Krishna, not only within his heart, but he would see Krishna's leela going on in Vrindavan. So the whole idea, as Prabhupada explains in the 33rd verse, purport to the 33rd verse, is that it is a development of our serving mood. In the material world, no one wants to be a servant. We are here trying to be the master. And what we need, the medicine, the remedial medicine for that, is to develop the serving mood. And this, the devotees develop a spiritual individuality in their spontaneous service attitude, which is enhanced on and on up to the point of madhudras, or transcendental loving service reciprocated between the lover and the beloved. But it's all the same principle of developing this serving mood. The Lord continues after explaining this very secret point of how to actually see him everywhere and actually how to be free from pride. What knowledge is required, and then what sincerity to put that into practice, and what purity is required. Since you have desired, the Lord continued, to increase the population innumerably and expand your varieties of service, you shall never be deprived in this matter, because by my causeless mercy upon you, you will always increase for all times. You are the original Rishi, and because your mind is always fixed on me, even though you'll be engaged in generating various progeny, the vicious mode of passion will never encroach upon you. We'll come back and maybe read some of those purports. They're short, sweet, but it's going now. The Lord continues. So he's giving him full blessing. And this is what's actually required to succeed in spiritual life, the full blessings of the Lord. Although I'm not easily knowable by the conditioned soul, you have known me today because you know that my personality is not constituted of anything material, and specifically not of the five gross and three subtle elements. When you were contemplating whether there was a source to the stem of the lotus of your birth, and you even entered into that stem, you could not trace out anything. But at that time, I manifested my form from within. The personality of Godhead can be experienced only by His causeless mercy, not by mental speculation or with the help of material senses. Material senses cannot approach the transcendental understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can be appreciated only by submissive devotional service when He reveals Himself before the devotee. Only by love of Godhead can one know God, and not otherwise. The Personality of Godhead cannot be seen with the material eyes, but He can be seen from within by spiritual eyes opened by the ointment of love of Godhead. For someone who does not have the blessings or doesn't have spiritual eyes yet, no matter where he looks, he cannot see God. No matter how closely he looks, no matter how powerful his microscope and telescope are, he cannot see God anywhere. And on the other hand, someone who is pure, and especially someone who has love for Krishna, premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santasa daiva vidyeshu valokayanti, he sees Shyamasundar everywhere. There is no place where he looks where he doesn't see him. Stavaram dagamam dekina deki taramoti sarvatra hoya nija ishtadeva spurti. Everywhere he looks, he doesn't see that thing. He sees everything as a manifestation of Krishna. As long as one's spiritual eyes are closed due to the dirty covering of matter, one cannot see the Lord. But when the dirt is removed by the process of devotional service, one can see the Lord without a doubt. Brahma's personal endeavor to see the root of the lotus pipe failed. But when the Lord was satisfied by His penance and devotion, He revealed Himself from within with no external endeavor. These points are so important. They're very, very practical points for progressing in devotional service should we wish to make advancement. The next thing that the Lord says, also very important in expansion of that. O Brahma, the prayers that you have chanted praising the glories of my transcendental activities, the prayers that you have chanted, the penances, the tapa, the austerities that you have performed, undertaken to understand me, the prayers you have chanted, the austerities you have performed to understand me, and your firm faith in me, all these are to be considered my causeless mercy. Proper short purport. When a living entity desires to serve the Lord in transcendental loving service, the Lord helps the devotee in so many ways as the Chaitya Guru, or the spiritual master within. And thus the devotee can perform many wonderful activities beyond material estimation. By the mercy of the Lord, even a layman can compose prayers of the highest spiritual perfection. Such spiritual perfection is not limited by material qualification, but is developed by dint of one's sincere endeavor to render transcendental service. Voluntary endeavor is the only qualification for spiritual perfection. Material acquisitions of wealth or education are not considered. In other words, the prayers that Brahma offered, the faith that he had, the ability to perform the austerities that he did, these were all Krishna's potency that have been given to Brahma. Why? Because of his sincere endeavor to render transcendental service. Voluntary endeavor is the only qualification. And then Krishna benedicts when he wants, as he likes, He benedicts the devotee with the abilities. He explains this in the Bhagavad Gita. He's the ability in man. So no one has the power to do anything by themselves to please Krishna. We can't do anything actually in the material world without Krishna giving us permission. As the Anumanta, the permitter. And we can't do anything especially to see Him without that ability and descending knowledge, His mercy coming to us. But to get big mercy, big mercy, we have to voluntarily take advantage of the little, seemingly little blessings that He gives us. Whatever He gives us, we have to see His mercy, and therefore that is the only reason why a devotee can live in this world and be free from anxiety and misery, because he is living in the mercy of Krishna. But this takes very advanced consciousness and very deep sincerity and very, very detached from being the controller and the enjoyer of this material world. The Lord continues, I am very much pleased by your description of me in terms of my transcendental qualities, which appear mundane to the mundaners. I grant you all benedictions in your desire to glorify all the planets by your welfare. Purport. A pure devotee of the Lord like Brahma and those in his line of the disciplic succession always desire that the Lord be known all over the universe by each and every one of the living entities. The desire of the devotees is always blessed. That desire of the devotees is always blessed by the Lord. Any human being who prays like Brahma and who thus worships me shall very soon be blessed with the fulfillment of all his desires, for I am the Lord of all benedictions. So one may think, oh, I can get all my desires fulfilled if I play like Brahma, so therefore I'll just say the prayers of Brahma and get all my desires fulfilled. But the question is, are we really praying like Brahma is praying, with sincerity, with purity, with desire to please Krishna? And if we would pray like Brahma, we'll get the results that Brahma gets. But we can't be superficial. It is the opinion of expert transcendentalists that the ultimate goal of performing all traditional good work, penances, sacrifices, charity, mystic activities, trance, is to evoke my satisfaction. I am the supersoul of every individual. I am the supreme director and the dearest. People are wrongly attached to the gross and subtle bodies, but they should be attached to me only. Not only, and Prabhupada's purport, and this is so, it's a long purport, but it's so important and so nice. Because it's very, very heavy statement that we should be attached to him only. Not even our own bodies. Gross body, but this, and subtle body, the mind even. His Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, is the dearest in both the conditioned and liberated states. When a person does not know that the Lord is the only dearmost object, then he is in the conditioned state of life. And when one knows perfectly well that the Lord is the only dearmost object, he is considered to be liberated. There are degrees of knowing one's relationship with the Lord, depending on the degree of realization, as to why the Supreme Lord is the dearmost object of every living being. The real reason is clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 15:7. The living entity is called the Atma, and the Lord is called the Paramatma. So we have the Atma means the self, but he is the self of the self. He is our supreme self. We are not God, but he is the self of our self, the Atma of our Atma. He is the beloved, our natural and only beloved. Just like we are so attached to the body because we are souls, because there's something dear within the body. But the actual reason we're attached to the body, etc., is because of Krishna's within the body. He is the natural beloved of every living entity. Because then we have that eternal relationship with him. So we are Atma and he is the Paramatma. The living entity is called Brahman and the Lord is called the Parabrahman or the Parameshwar, the Ishwara Paramakrishna. The conditioned souls who do not have self-realization accept the material body as the dearmost. The idea of the dearmost is then spread all over the body, both concentrated and extended. Because we think the body is dearmost to us, then everything concentrated and expanded from the body that gives the body pleasure also becomes dear to us. The attachment for one's own body and its extensions like children and relatives is actually developed on the basis of the real living entity. As soon as the real living entity is out of the body, even the body of that most dear son is no longer attractive. Therefore, the living sparks or eternal parts of the Supreme is the real basis of affection and not the body. Because the living entities are also part of the whole living entity, the Supreme Living Entity is the factual basis of affection for all. One who has forgotten the basic principle of this love for everything has only flickering love because he is in Maya. Flickering love. That means we have love for 1 minute and then 2 minutes later we can abhor the same thing that we loved. Flickering, changing continuously. Because it's unnatural. The more one is affected by the principle of Maya, the more he is detached from the basic principle of love. One cannot factually love anything else unless he is fully developed in the loving service of the Lord. Otherwise, our love is flickering. Fickle, whimsical. In the present verse, stress is given to focusing love upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word kuryat is significant here. This means one must have it. That means necessity. Another word, the Sanskrit word for necessity is prayojan. This is the goal, the sadhya, the perfection. Sadhya, sadhya bhava. The goal, the necessity is love for Krishna. It is just to stress, one must have it, it is the necessity. It is just to stress that we must have more and more attachment to the principle of love. And then, in the last two verses, the Lord says, by following my instructions, you can now generate the living entities as before. By dint of your complete Vedic wisdom and the body you have directly received from me, the supreme cause of everything. The sage Maitreya said, after instructing Brahma, the creator of the universe, to expand the primeval Lord, the personality of Godhead, in his personal form as Narayan, disappeared. Well, there's so many wonderful and important instructions in these verses and the very kind purports of Srila Prabhupada. Questions or comments?
compassion correspond to? Compassion
is from the second one. Shatra Sloka. See? I haven't pieced that together exactly. In that one, it seems to be somewhat different. That seems to be at the very beginning of creation, and the Lord shows him the Vaikuntha planets there. And this one, it seems to be the intermediate after, it doesn't say exactly what, but maybe after Brahma's day or something. That's what it seems. At that time, he showed him the Vaikuntha planets. This time, he sees the Seshanaga, it seems. And at that time, it seemed to have been Shyamasundar. As Gopal Tapaniya planets, at least some of the times.
Where does the Brahma Sangeeta
come into this? After seeing Govinda, Lord Brahma composes the Brahma Sangeeta. That was explained a little earlier. So that is an indication that he actually saw Govinda.
And this is different to when he's observing the terrestrial world, the Bhakul, he's actually seeing spiritual world.
Yeah, were you here when we were doing the ninth chapter?
No.
From the second canto. It seems like it. According to the differences in descriptions, it seems like that. But yet in one purport, Prabhupada said he was seeing Govinda here. But it seems like it from the verses.
It also says in chapter 8, 6, 10, 22, that Rama meditated for 100 of his years.
Yeah.
Isn't that his whole life? 100 of his years. How many years of his years does he have?
Maybe they start counting after. I don't know.
Prabhupada says that he describes...
What's the Sanskrit word? What's the Sanskrit word?
In due course of time, he...
That's not Sanskrit.
Purusha Ayusha, by the duration of his age. Abhi Pravita.
What verse is this?
8:22.
Can't say much about that. And other times it says he meditated for 1,000 years, a millennium.
Prabhupada says in the purport that his one day is equal to 1,000 times the aggregate of four yugas. On that basis, Brahma meditated for 100 years before he could understand the supreme cause of all causes, and then he wrote the Brahma Samhita.
Any other questions? Unless someone wants to answer that one.
I was thinking if you did that every night, every morning, you know. Every morning before you could get up. And
sometimes it feels like that when you're getting up, doesn't it?
Talk about Lord Brahma was afraid that he would consider himself the demon.
Yeah. Yeah. So the reply to that was that one has to see Krishna in everything and see oneself in relationship to Krishna and to see Krishna in all, everything external to oneself and within every living entity. So if one has that vision of knowing himself as a servant of Krishna, as Krishna's, and seeing other living entities not as their gross body or their minds or their intellects, but as also servants of Krishna, in all one's dealings, and seeing those things composed of matter, as also Krishna's, in other words, Krishna within them, then one will be devoid of the tendency to exploit the material nature, because basically one will have no false ego. And that's the only way. In other words, one has to be very, very advanced. And until that time, so the question is how to get to that platform. So one has to do the best one can under superior guidance. So if one's not on that platform, one will, when one's doing one's work and one's service, one will get bewildered. But if one keeps oneself under guidance and continues, then that bewilderment will gradually diminish. Because one will naturally think that one is the doer, and look how much I've done, and get proud. But the very nature of the material, of Krishna's mercy working through the material world, is that pride will be crushed. And then one will learn the art of depending on Krishna, and understanding that one is not the one who is doing it. It's not due to my material powers that the work is getting done. That's why book distribution is such a wonderful way to learn this, if one will go out every day, regardless of whether one feels happy, sad, feels like doing it, not doing it. This is surrender. So when one surrenders to any, book distribution is a good example, but to any service, doing it any day, some days the service just happens by magic and everything works perfectly, and you start thinking, yeah, I really got it together and I'm really powerful, I. And you know, your hat size goes up and everything. But then the next day, you're nothing. And then one gets in the proper perspective that Krishna is the one who's actually doing it, and one prays to be a pure instrument of Krishna. So even though one's vision may not yet be fully on that level, by humility and prayer and doing service, one can constantly chant, and one can do the best that one can do and be on the best road that one can be on to attain that platform. Is that right?
One doesn't understand all that unless he's on that level of consciousness.
But if one hears and one keeps on steadily doing the duties, it happens, because you don't have to pray for the bad days to come. They happen. And you don't have to request it. And then you're confronted with yourself. And then you either become humble, or one becomes confronted with one's lack of sincerity at those times.
If we approach our service whimsically, according to our mood, then it's much more difficult to advance, is what you're saying? Because of the steadiness, we can see our own fluctuation, our own pride, and how it gets crushed.
You're not limited by that. You're not limited by... If one takes the service strongly, I'm going to do it regardless of how I feel, then one is not... One's taken a very big step towards controlling the mind, because the mind doesn't become the ruler anymore, but rather the desire to serve Krishna becomes the ruler. That means Krishna. So you're living so much more in your relationship. That's why something can be said for good old-fashioned Krishna consciousness, you know, when there was a temple and it was running this way, and the brahmacharis would go out every day and this and that. And something's to be said for, because one really learns a lot by it if one can stand up to it. One really does. You know, one learns to neglect the mind and depend on Krishna. And then there's a reciprocation from Krishna. for that. Yeah, the steadiness is very important. Does that pen going up there mean you have a question?
Yeah.
I thought so.
I just didn't know how to word it, and I don't know if it's worth asking. Just in regards to...
There's an old saying that if you ask a question, you're a fool for a minute, and if you don't ask, you're a fool for your life. So anyway.
So just in regards to, you mentioned voluntary endeavor.
Yeah, it's specific.
And I always get confused with that versus, I don't even know if it's versus, but seeing Krishna as the controller, and Krishna's controlling everything, that versus waiting for Krishna to guide one to do to doing something, actually surrendering to that rather than taking the step to do it, such as waiting for it to come, knowing that Krishna is controlling versus voluntary endeavor. And it's, I get really
well. The voluntary endeavor means that you're doing your part to do what Krishna wants you to do. So, and then that's what the meaning of that verse was, that the voluntary endeavor was what we should do, but Krishna is the one who actually does it. It's like a small example that I use in this. I used it in that Bhagavad Gita book. Like if there's a father is a weightlifter, very strong. And then a small boy sees his father lifting these big heavy weights, so he says, now I'm going to lift that. Because he doesn't know who he is. So he bends down and goes, so what does the father do when he sees that? He walks over and he says, okay, try again. You'll be able to do it this time. And the boy goes, okay, when I count to three, it's going to go up. And the father goes like this, and the boy goes like this. So who's actually doing it? Well, who's actually doing it? But the boy is also doing it, because if he didn't make his endeavor, the father would have no impetus to do it. So, but we can say that the... Yes?
Yes.
So, but who's the one who's really doing it? You could say that the father is the one really doing it. You certainly can't say that the boy is the one really doing it, because he's making the voluntary effort. So we, our job, is with devotion to... and under order and guidance, to want to make devotional offerings to Krishna, to lift weights, and to do anything in the material world is like lifting weights, especially if you want to do it day after day after day after day. Lifting weights on... Yeah, lifting weights. So we try to do it, but we know our incapacity, not like the little boy. We know our incapacity, and we take shelter of Krishna, and know only by His grace we can do it, and then we make our endeavor and depend on Him for the results.
So that example that was given is the father reciprocating, but where he is actually controlling it and actually manipulating everything, that's where it gets...
But he allows us our freedom nonetheless. He allows us our freedom, although sometimes it doesn't feel like it. But we have freedom, we always have some freedom in there. And depending upon how pure we are, we have more or less freedom. We never can have very, very much freedom. But someone who's covered by the mode of ignorance has less, relatively less than someone who's in the mode of goodness. So, but even someone in the mode of ignorance, that's like Prabhupada at 22nd Avenue, Prabhupada was lecturing, and some Bowery bum came in, all intoxicated. What do they call them? Head tramps or something? Derelict, deros. Proper Aussie terminology. So he came in all drunk and everything, and he had some toilet paper in his hand or something. And he said, "Here, I brought this for you," or something like that. And he walked over. He walked in and said, "I'll be right back. I got something for you." And he came back and he brought in some rolls of toilet paper. Everyone was. When Prabhupada, after he left, Prabhupada said, "Just see, his devotional service has now begun." So it's not that he's performing the highest level of devotional service, but he's done something. He's made a proper execution of voluntary service somewhere in there. Because there's so many derelicts who don't do that. So if we have to keep on trying to do our part in executing whatever free will is within our control to serve Krishna in a proper way according to Shastra. Okay?
So it's the external show of the external exertion in doing a service versus the internal exertion of waiting, like controlling oneself and not doing it, knowing that Krishna will guide. I'm not wording this properly, but if Krishna doesn't actually need what we're doing externally, he actually wants. Is it that he will be, you know? It is that he wants our internal.
He wants the internal, but he also wants something external done. So if he's not going to do it through us, he'll do it through someone else. But he wants something done too. He wants the people to get prasadam, the people to get books. He wants people to chant Hare Krishna. He wants the number of devotees to increase. He wants that. And therefore, it's said that, you know, it's our fortune if we cooperate with his desire. He wants the deity to be worshipped nicely. He wants us to be detached from matter. He wants us to chant nicely on beats. He wants us to... And it's not that... I heard Prabhupada explain this on a tape recently. It's not that he wants... Some parts of it he wants... one way, but it's not that he wants flowers and fruits and water and big temples and things like that. What he wants, the internal part, is he wants our devotion. But why does he want our devotion? It's not that he's lacking it, but he wants us to enjoy on an equal level with him. This is what we are meant for. And only if we come up to a devotional standard will our pleasure increase to that level. That's what he wants. It's natural that he wants to enjoy with his parts and parcels, just like parents naturally want to enjoy with the children. But if the children are rebellious and going the wrong way, they can't actually enjoy. So they try to bring them in the proper line. So it's just natural for him to want to enjoy with his parts and parcels. And their level of enjoyment comes up if they can enjoy in devotional life with Krishna. Anyway, it's something that I think you have to think about too, a lot, you know, day after day after day, and get new realizations on it. And if you have more questions, we can try. There's an inconceivable element in there between our free will and how Krishna is in control. But ultimately, we have to have free will, otherwise there's no question of us loving him. There's nothing in it for Krishna. And when the devotion is an exercise of our free will, our loving him, appreciation for him, then it's meaningful. That's the voluntary part. But yet, and he reciprocates with that desire, and ultimately it's under his control. How's it? Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Good question. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Lord Brahma ki jai, Sri Krishna ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. So It's also like who's doing it? The devotee, when someone offers Krishna something, the devotee, when he sees that, he thinks it's just Krishna who's doing it. It's not me who's done something wonderful. So from the devotee's point of view, he sees Krishna doing it. But from Krishna's point of view, he glorifies the devotee. But Krishna sees that the devotee has done this. But the devotee sees Krishna has done it. So we want to know, okay, who actually did it? So it's the devotee and Krishna. It's the devotee doing it by Krishna's mercy. Something like that. That's how I understand it. Is this to the point of what you're asking, or a little bit separate?
My husband has to be with me when I have this question. It's a discussion I'm always having.
Is it to the point? Or?
What you're saying is right as I see it. But the big picture is that when someone is doing something negative to you, we always have to see that it's not that person, because that person is a spirit soul not capable of the modes of nature. So we can't mistake the modes of nature to be the person. That's okay.
So you're looking at it from sort of a different type of an angle than you're looking at it more from that angle. Who to see it? See, the devotee sees that there's a verse that explains that. That's Tateyana Kampam Susimakshwano in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. That one has to see Krishna in it. Even though and one at the same time sees it's his previous reactions that are doing it to him, but seeing Krishna in it, not the person.
Yeah.